1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.
This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Eric Kirkendall talks about the proposed Whitewater theme park and the opposition to it with host Craig Lubo. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. The WashingtonPost.com reports a federal judge in Washington on Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to conduct further environmental reviews of the Dakota Access Pipeline, but stopped short of halting oil pumping operations pending further hearings beginning June 21st. U.S. District Judge James E. Boasberg handed a limited victory to Native American tribes in North Dakota that had challenged the administration's effort to speed the project, and his dense 91-page opinion directed both sides to appear before him this coming Wednesday to decide next legal steps. While the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, quote, substantially complied, end quote, with federal environmental laws, Boasberg wrote, quote, it did not adequately consider the impacts of an oil spill on fishing rights, hunting rights, or environmental justice, or the degree to which the pipeline's effects are likely to be highly controversial, end quote. Boasberg's decision comes just weeks after Dallas-based Energy Transfer Partners had begun pumping crude oil through the 1,170-mile line carrying North Dakota oil through South Dakota and Iowa to a distribution point in Illinois. In late 2016, President Barack Obama ordered the Army Corps of Engineers, which controls the river and lake, to ask Energy Transfer Partners, the pipeline company, to submit environmental impact statements on alternative routes. But Trump, on January 24th, ordered the engineers to speedily issue the final easement the company needed to finish construction in the national interest. On February 8th, the Army said it no longer needed an environmental impact statement and issued the easement. ENN.com reports, Antarctica is considered to be a pristine wilderness compared to other regions and was thought to be relatively free from plastic pollution. However, new findings by scientists from University of Hull and British Antarctic Survey, or BAS, have revealed that recorded levels of microplastics are five times higher than you would expect to find from local sources, such as research stations and ships. Microplastics are particles less than 5 millimeters in diameter and are present in many everyday items, such as toothpaste, shampoo, shower gels, and clothing. They can also result from the breakdown of plastic ocean debris. The results published in the journal Science of the Total Environment have raised the possibility that plastic originating from outside the region may be getting across the Antarctic circumpolar current, historically thought to be almost impenetrable. The quality of the air in California may be improving, but it's still dire. That's according to the American Lung Association's recent State of the Air 2017 report, which labeled the state and region a leader in air pollution with the highest ozone levels. The annual study ranks the cleanest and most polluted areas in the country by grading counties in the U.S. based on harmful recorded levels of ozone, or smog, and particle pollution. The 2017 report used data collected from 2013 to 2015. The top three regions in the country with the worst smog levels were Los Angeles, Long Beach, Bakersfield, and Fresno, Madera. Salinas, though, was recognized as one of the cleanest cities in the state and the country. The air quality in the state was significantly better in Northern California, found the report. Nevertheless, more than 90% of Californians still live in counties with unhealthy air. And finally, 74% of the world's population will be exposed to deadly heat waves by 2100 if carbon gas emissions continue to rise at current rates, according to a study published in Nature Climate Change. Even if emissions are aggressively reduced, the percent of the world's human population affected, it is expected to reach 48%. Numerous examples, such as the 2003 European heat wave that killed approximately 70,000 people, the 2010 Moscow heat wave that killed 10,000 people, and the 1995 Chicago heat wave that killed 700 people, are staggering examples of the risk to life posed by heat waves. But beyond these highly cited examples, little was known about how common such killer heat waves are. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Mike Murphy.
Well, just to say, we're going to take our first break, and then we'll be back with Craig and Eric.
The Water Sense Hotel Challenge. on this Current Cast.
Hotels and other lodging businesses account for about 15% of the water used in commercial and institutional facilities around the country.
That's Tara O'Hare of the Environmental Protection Agency. To help hotels conserve, the EPA launched the WaterSense Hotel Challenge, a program that provides best management practices and tools. Some of the recommended techniques include checking the facility for leaks, using drought-resistant landscaping, establishing a towel and linen reuse program, and upgrading shower heads, faucets, and toilets to WaterSense-labeled fixtures. The result is a win all around. By greening their practices, hotels will save green on their water bills. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Shawnee Mission East graduate, Thomas Frank.
But I think that the right answer to this incredible reign of fake populism that has been going on for decades now, that the right answer to it is to give people the real deal. To show those Trump supporters out there that we care about them more than Trump does, that yes, the system is rigged, and Trump's one of the guys that rigged it.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
From all of us here at KKFI, Voice of the Community, thank you to every single supporter, volunteer, and donor throughout the 2017 Spring Fund Drive. Now, if you missed your chance, you can go to kkfi.org/donate. Thank you so very much.
Okay, thank you for joining us. This is Craig Lubo, and today I have Eric Kirkendall on. For those who recognize his name, this is the same Eric that we have on often talk about diesel health emissions from the diesel trucks. But today we're going to talk about a proposed whitewater rafting facility at Clinton State Park in, well, it's close to Lawrence. And we are going to take phone calls. I'll go ahead and give out that number so you can call with questions as you hear Eric talk about this. It's 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
So let me have you just talk about what the Whitewater Rafting Facility proposal consists of.
I will, and if I could, I'll talk about Clinton Lake a little bit first. Clinton is just on the outskirts of Kansas City, heavily used by folks, heavily used by folks from Lawrence and Kansas City and Topeka. It's a beautiful lake, lots of camping and hiking and biking and swimming and kayaking and much more. It's a state-controlled facility that we're talking about here, the state park at Clinton Lake. It's about 1,500 acres, and it's enjoyed by everybody, all kinds of people, rich and poor, very beautiful. You can go out there certain times of the year and see eagles, and it's just spectacular and a lot of fun. What has happened is the state, apparently, has been for several years pushing privatization of the state park. And they tried a few years ago to put out an RFP to get people to bid to build a conference center, and that didn't work out. Now they've hooked up with an outfit from the east that runs and built the U.S. National Whitewater Center, and are proposing to basically give them the state park and have the construction of a whitewater theme park financed by the citizens of Lawrence through star bonds and tax receipts from the theme park and from an additional to-be-built shopping center.
Okay. And so if it's financed through star bonds and tax receipts, would that include, like, are they seeking property tax rebatements?
The star bond piece is, I'm no expert on this, by the way, but the star bond piece is about sales tax receipts. But Lawrence or Douglas County or both would also be on the hook to spend tens of millions of dollars for additional infrastructure to service the facility.
Okay.
Which, of course, comes out of our property taxes and every other tax base we have.
All right. And as I understand it, this company is talking about, in terms of actual development, would be 40 to 60 acres. And it would consist of whitewater rafting, kayaking, zip lines, bicycle running and hiking, trails, etc.
So what's
wrong with that?
Those are fine activities. Nothing's wrong with them. And there's a group of about 250 of us who are fighting this proposal. Not because we have something against whitewater rafting. We don't. Or biking, or kayaking, or hiking. All of those things, with the exception of zip lines, now happen, and whitewater rafting now happen at Clinton State Park, and they could happen anytime. With the exception of whitewater rafting. We don't have whitewater in Kansas, as you know. We go to Colorado for the whitewater. But we're not opposed to this project. The problem with the project is it's an OPM project, other people's money. This would never be financed and built by the private sector because it's not responsible. It won't pay for itself. They want tax dollars to pay for it. And we have a big problem with that, and we have a big problem with ruining our beautiful lake. The group says they would do active development on only 40 to 60 acres. However, they would control access to 1,500 acres of public land.
Now, Clinton Lake was a man-made lake. Does that make a difference? Is the environmental damage less from development where it's a man-made lake versus a natural lake?
Well, you know, if you live in Lawrence, it is what it is. You certainly could have made a case that when the reservoir was put in, there was a great deal of environmental damage since a lot of land was drowned. But that's happened and that's done, and it's a beautiful lake. The land around it is in very natural condition, the kind of condition you would find in other wooded and hilly places in Kansas. It's very beautiful, and no, we don't want it degraded. The developer is proposing to put in 5,000 parking spots. They claim, I think it's ridiculous, they claim they will get 700,000 visitors a year. It will completely, and they want to put a resort hotel and much more. It will completely destroy and ruin the character of that lake, and that lake is also the source of half of Lawrence's drinking water. There are a lot of issues there.
Okay. Now, I understand from the proposal, when the CEO of that company from North Carolina was interviewed by Chad Longhorn on a blog back in February, and the CEO says that there won't be water issues because Clinton Lake would not be used to feed the whitewater course. And he says it would be a mix of municipal and rural district water that would be used to feed that course. And then he also says that none of the water from the course would drain back into the lake either. So
that is certainly what he says. However, last year when the U.S. National Whitewater Center, their other big development, had a death due to brain-eating amoeba. He also said their water was clean and not especially risky, and it turned out it was not true. It was turned out people kayaking there complained of gobs and gobs of gunk in it. It was in really bad shape. So the company does not have a good track record. I'm not at all convinced that what they say is true, that those two sources of water will be isolated from each other. And, of course, given this is my drinking water and the drinking water of lots of people in Lawrence, we also have concerns about runoff from the facilities, chemicals sprayed and fertilizer and oil and antifreeze from cars and all of that, that lake does not now suffer.
Now, he did address the situation with parking and runoff from the parking lots, and saying that would be go through some kind of trap thing that would prevent it from getting into the lake. But I take it from what you said a couple minutes ago that you don't feel like we can trust the company to do that?
I don't think that's the biggest issue, so I haven't focused on that a lot. The water pollution issue is a huge one. If you have a lot of development around a lake, you're going to have runoff, you're going to have debris in the lake, you're going to have chemicals in the lake. There's just no way it's not going to happen. You start planting and maintaining shrubbery, and you have lawn crews out there and all of that. It is going to degrade the lake. There's no way around it. Happens everywhere. I'm sure it'll happen there. My problems with this proposed development are really can be divided into four parts. One, I view this as a kleptocracy. This is 1,500 acres of public land. They want to turn around and give it to a very rich company so they can serve other relatively well-to-do people who are going to come out there and use their expensive facilities. Right now, this is available to everybody. Poor people, rich people, anybody, $5 gets you in. You can enjoy everything. A season pass, extremely cheap. So this is widely used. That's number one. Number two, fiscally irresponsible. Ridiculous projections. This would be the seventh largest water park in the United States, eclipsing huge water parks on the East Coast near D.C. and much more densely populated areas. This company has a horrible track record. When they built their U.S. National Whitewater Center, after they built it, they defaulted on tens of millions, I think it may be over $20 million in bank loans, and they were subsidized by something like seven cities to the tune of $12 million. The Star Bonds put the risk on the taxpayers' back. They would also, this wouldn't even with their projections, this development would not generate enough funding to pay for itself. So they've also proposed Star Bonds from another shopping center. That is the tax receipts from another shopping center. And all of this will take away taxes that we need in Douglas County and in Lawrence for public services, for roads, et cetera, to benefit another company. Three, this is environmentally irresponsible. My main issue, besides the water quality issue, is the fact that Lawrence, unfortunately, uses it, all of us in Lawrence, when we turn our light switch on, we are burning coal. And I'm no expert, my back of the envelope estimate is that the water pumps alone for this development will use 3 megawatts of power per hour. And that requires burning something around a ton and a half of coal an hour. So more pollution, more particulate matter, more mercury, all of that.
And that would be because there are no natural rapids, so they have to be created artificially.
That's true. Yeah, great point, Craig. These kind of parks typically pump enough water for a 5-foot drop. So it takes a huge amount of power to do it. And if I may, my last problem is we don't need it. People in Lawrence don't want it. People in Kansas City don't want it. This Clinton Lake, the state park, is widely used by bicyclists, off-road trail bicyclists from Kansas City, and they don't want it either. We just don't need it.
So from what you said before, it sounds like maybe they're disputing the claim that it would bring 700,000 tourists a year. The groups opposing it, what are their estimates?
I can't make an estimate. All I can tell you is that this would be almost as many people as a water rafting course called Water Country USA near Williamsburg, Virginia, about 5 minutes from Busch Gardens. This would be bigger than that, or as almost as big as that. That's crazy. We don't have the population. We don't have the weather. We don't have the number of days you can use it. So I don't believe the 700,000. I think that's high and inflated. Their numbers for their last development were also inflated. So I think what's going to come of this is a lot of people. Maybe it'll be 200,000 in big financial losses to the taxpayer. I don't mind if they do it. The private sector is great. Capitalism can be good. Just pay your own way. they can go out and buy the land and they can build this if they want to. They'd rather we paid for it.
If they were to do that, would the state be selling the entire park to them or just a portion of it to do the development?
I don't know exactly how this would come out in the wash working with the state, but I do know how they did it in at the U.S. National Whitewater Center. Namely, they rented 400 acres for $1 a year. I suspect they would be looking for something like that. I would like that deal, too.
I do want to give out the phone number again for those listening. We're talking to Eric Kirkendall. If you have some questions or comments, especially people living in the Lawrence area, we'd love to hear from you since you would be affected by this. Our number is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Okay. So from what you're saying, you don't buy into the idea that this would be effective competition with Branson?
I had never thought about that angle. I don't really care if it would be effective competition with Branson. I don't want to see them destroy the beauty of Clinton Lake and all the amenities everybody enjoys so that other people can make money.
Is there a way, let me ask you this, is there a way that this could be developed in an environmentally sound way without a lot of destruction?
Yes. I think that's probably possible. If this was to be done in a kind of private enterprise way, as opposed to a OPM way, other people's money way, they would find some land and buy it and develop it and put in the water park. And if it wasn't adjacent to Clinton Lake, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it at all. It certainly could be done. That's not what they propose, but it could be done.
So they can perhaps develop a private water park, not at Clinton Lake, but elsewhere in Lawrence.
Absolutely. This is a free country. They can do that if they can find investors who would do that, who would fund it. I don't think it's possible because I don't think it's fiscally responsible. But more power to them. If they can pull it off, they should.
And, of course, one of the things that they're proposing are zip lines. And I guess I would have a hard time seeing how that would attract people here. I mean, I've been zip lining in Costa Rica and a lot of people go in Colorado. I've been Hawaii. But you're going over mountains and scenery that just doesn't exist here from that. You know, you can see the scenery on ground level here, whereas in Hawaii, you need to be up on zip lines to take it all in.
It wouldn't be quite as good as what I've had. I honestly, I think, and a lot of my friends and neighbors think, that Clinton Lake could use more amenities, but amenities that are consistent with its character. For instance, there are some cabins out there. The governor has been vetoing attempts by the state parks people to fund to do the work to fund more cabins. More cabins would be very popular. There might even be a great place to put a zip line, but we don't need a theme park out there, and we don't need fake whitewater. As you know, all of us are 8 or 10 hours away from Great Whitewater, or closer, if we want to have that. Why make fake whitewater? Why pour a lot of concrete and build 5,000 parking spots? I don't see how that is good for the public at all.
Assuming they were to decide to do this as strictly a private development, wouldn't the environmental issues still be there? It's like, you know, if you have some place like Oceans of Fun where they have like a small pool of rapids, wouldn't they still be using the pumps and burning coal?
That's an excellent point. My suspicion, however, is if this was funded by their money and by banks to whom they had to pay that money back, as opposed to the public who would be on the hook. They would be thinking long and hard about reducing their energy costs and looking for a site that had those kind of drops, that had natural 5-foot drops, that they would find a way to do it economically. Now, might there be issues that the public, maybe I would still have problems with? It's certainly possible. But that's all kind of hypothetical at this point, since they haven't gone that route.
Is this something that would require any approval? Like, does it have to have an EPA assessment, or would it require approval by Corps of Engineers or any of those agencies?
I am not sure if NEPA would be triggered by this or not. It's a very good question, and I just don't know the answer, Craig.
All right. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you'll state your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Mac. I'm calling from Waldo. You mentioned the energy consumption. Are they proposing to generate any power, like putting in some wind turbines or solar arrays or anything like that to help supply their own energy?
Great question, Mac. I have heard nothing about anything like that.
Well, that would be helpful. Thanks for your show.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you for calling. All right. If anybody else has some questions, number is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. So following up on that question, that would obviously, if they could run the pumps, you know, using solar energy, then that would kind of take away a lot of the environmental degradation that we're concerned with.
At least it would solve the air pollution issue, certainly. Right. Still, that remains our source of drinking water, and there would be issues in our place where we go for recreation. So those issues would still remain. But you're right, of course. If they could generate the electricity in some other way, at least they wouldn't be burning coal.
And when you say the state's proposing to give them this land, so they wouldn't be paying any fee like to lease it, or?
I don't know the details of exactly how the state would do this, and I'm not sure they do. I don't know that that's been negotiated. So, but if they followed their previous model, at their last development, they would be in getting virtually free land, use of the land virtually free.
And do you happen to know, did this company come to the state to propose this, or did the state or then the Brownback administration go to them seeking some kind of proposal?
That is a most interesting question, Craig. I have heard guesses that it was the state that went to this company as opposed to the reverse, but I don't know that that's true.
Okay. And we do have another caller on the line. Caller, if you'll state your first name and where you're calling from.
This is a blind guy calling from Villa Incognito here in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. Now, I know you're talking about white water there, so you couldn't really use the Clinton name because of, you know, bad press. But how about if you got a lot of fans there in Kansas, use Trump? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, use the Trump name for this Whitewater Park. That'd go over big, wouldn't it? You know, you take their projection for people and that stuff, but Nelson only operates 6 days a week, and they have some other holidays in there. But they've got their attendance year-round, 550,000, and they have much better opportunities for not getting into your pocket if you want to go there and view some good art. I hear every night from a blind guy. So, yeah, their projections are just, you know. But if it is a good deal, why don't they just raise the money themselves, go find a piece of property, and knock yourself out. Hey, peace out.
Okay, thank you for the call.
I love that point.
So he's saying, I don't know if that's accurate. He's saying that Nelson brings in 550,000 people a year. So
these folks are claiming that this development would bring in many more than that, 700,000.
But doesn't recreation usually bring in more people than an art museum does?
The Whitewater Parks I've looked at, and I've looked at all of them, but very few of them do. This would be the, let me look at my number, something like the seventh biggest whitewater park in the country, if their claims were true, in an area which does not have that many months when it's really good to spend time outside.
Well, that's the other question, is that this would be, what, a 3 month a year?
I don't know what they have in mind, but I'm
maybe 4 months with global warming and staying warm long, the summer is longer.
I'm very confident it won't be open as many months as the park in Williamsburg I've been talking about that does about the same.
Right.
Great points.
So if anybody else would like to call with comment or question, the number is 816-931-5534. So basically you're saying, sum it up, we want to be private with no tax money involved. But let me ask you this, though. I mean, almost all of the businesses in Kansas that I can think of in recent years, you know, whether it's the Legends or the AMC theaters out there and a whole host of other, even the stores, all get tax abatements. So is there really anything more wrong with offering that to a resort if you're giving it to the stores?
If this was not at Clinton Lake State Park, a park that would be destroyed, I would say the issue would be very similar to the question of giving star bonds for building the Great Mall of the Great Plains or the Power and Light District in Kansas City, Missouri. But I would also point out that those two examples, and I probably could have found five or six others, are huge money losers for the public. So there is an issue that's broader than just this development, and I think it's one we should really look carefully at. One of the reasons President Trump has said that he does not respect public officials is because it's so easy to con them out of money. And very often these developers who know how to play those games are really good at talking politicians who, usually good people, but not so sophisticated sometimes, into funding their ventures. And I would submit that the track record of those is pretty poor.
I'm reading some blogs here, and one of these says, development doesn't enhance nature at the park. He says, or she says, I have never quite understood people who get excited about covering up nature with concrete and the bells and whistles of an amusement park in an effort to make it.
That is a commonly held belief among the people that I've been talking to. I know who said that. It was so well said. I completely agree. Clinton Lake State Park is beautiful. My wife and I love to go out there hiking and swimming and biking. Is there any need to pour a lot of concrete and make white water? I don't see it. It's a very enjoyable place without that. So I agree. A shout out to Kelly. Thank you, Kelly.
All right, so if the groups that are opposing this, let me ask you this, because I think the goal of the state is to bring in tourist dollars. And, you know, right now the top tourist spot in Kansas is Legends, which is kind of sad that it's a shopping center is your top tourist spot. So if we want to bring in tourism, is there something that's environmentally sound and fiscally sound that these groups are offering as an alternative suggestion?
Yes, in the sense that those of
us who use Clinton Lake would like to see more amenities, but amenities that are consistent with the character of the place. We'd love to see more cabins, kayak rentals, the sorts of things you typically see at a well-run state park. We don't have those. There's a few cabins and they're nice. We could use more of that, better maintained trails, all of those things. So yeah, there are a lot of amenities and they would bring more people there. But I would mention too that I might be wrong about this number, but I believe the number 7 tourist attraction in the state of Kansas is Massachusetts Street. And Massachusetts Street has got, I can't tell you how many private businesses on it. Maybe it's 80. I don't know what that number is. Those folks did not get subsidies from anybody. There may be some exceptions there. They paid their own way. And I don't think it's fair for some big developer to come in and be given the use of tax dollars to build a new facility and to compete with those merchants, because this developer plans on, among other things, building restaurants and hotels that would compete directly with folks that are not getting subsidized. So I just from a private enterprise perspective, I have a problem with this too, that way.
You're saying Mass Street.
Massachusetts.
Right, that's Street, yeah. In downtown Lawrence.
Yes.
Isn't the lake and the restaurants that would be at the lake, wouldn't that be a fairly substantial distance?
Those are maybe 4 or 5 miles away. And what I understand about the U.S. National Whitewater Center, and what would probably be true of this, is that these are destinations where the developer wants people to come and spend the day or spend the weekend. So they would spend the money at his hotel, his restaurants, et cetera. Most people in Lawrence don't think that anybody else would see any of that money.
Right. We do need to take a break now, and we will return in a couple minutes.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Parents have always had to find ways to talk about tough topics with their kids. Sex, drugs, money. Now there's a new topic to tackle, climate change. Dan Thiem is a campground owner in California and father of 2 boys. He's passionate about helping his 9 and 11-year-old sons learn how to reduce carbon pollution. So he teaches them the connection between their energy use and climate change, and then helps them remember to turn off the lights. He also encourages the boys to walk to school when the weather permits, and to use reusable water bottles and compostable lunch bags. Thiem advises parents who want to talk about climate change with their kids to keep it simple.
Focus on those things which you and your family can do now, rather than trying to overwhelm them with the enormity of the problem and its complexity.
He says this creates a foundation of knowledge to build on as kids grow.
And I think it's like anything with your children, the more honest and open you can be with them about the problems facing not only them but the world, the more likely we are to educate our kids in ways that they can help us start finding solutions.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Craig Lubo, and thank you for staying with us. For those of you who have just joined us, we are talking to Eric Kirkendall, and we are talking about the whitewater rafting facility that has been proposed for Clinton State Park near the Lawrence area. And if you have any comments or questions, please call us at 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. And we would especially love to hear from people from the Lawrence area, since this would have the greatest impact on your area. We talked about, you said that this company did not have a good record, both fiscally or environmentally?
Or in terms of safety.
Okay. You didn't mention that before. What about the safety issue?
I briefly touched on it last summer. I believe it was last summer.
a young person died from a brain-eating amoeba at their facility, and it turned out that though they claimed the water was clean and treated properly, completely the opposite was true. It was, it had so much algae in it that people who went rafting complained about getting it in their mouth and their clothes and having to scrub it off when they got home. It was a known problem to everybody, and it's hard to believe that management didn't know about it. After the death, the Centers for Disease Control came in and tested the water and said it was very polluted and had high levels of this amoeba. Amoeba can be found other places, but this was a really filthy, gross water park. And so that's one of the areas in which they have a horrible track record.
Do we know if the proposal for Lawrence, if this would use the same technology, if they're talking about the same stuff, or would they be taking new measures that they didn't have out there?
I don't know.
Okay. And so have you or anybody that you're aware of have looked at other companies that operate similar types of facilities? Are there other companies that state could perhaps solicit bids from that have a better financial environmental record?
I have not looked at that because I'm really not in favor of putting a whitewater theme park at Clinton Lake. So
okay.
I don't want anybody to build it, frankly.
But isn't there some irony in this, though, to oppose this based on environmental grounds when it's a man-made lake and some people are going to say that there was enormous environmental damage done just to create the lake?
I don't – that's a really good question, and I'm glad you ask it because I don't think so. What we think of, what most of us think of as the natural environment in this country – in point of fact, is a man-made environment. Flint Hills, great example. Flint Hills were probably man-made in the sense that the Native Americans were burning off the grasslands. The forests of the Northeast, a lot of people think those were heavily developed, again, by Native Americans. The fact there's fruit trees and nut trees everywhere, a lot of people think that wasn't an accident at all. So in a way, that dichotomy between man-made and natural, it's hard to tell, you know, because we none of us have been here very long. But nevertheless, I think the responsibility for all of us is that when we change the environment, we do it in a thoughtful, careful, responsible way.
And what agency is it that is responsible for oversight of Clinton State Park? Is it Kansas Department of Health and Environment or another agency?
It's I don't remember the exact name of the agency, but it's the Parks Department of the state.
Okay. Before we run out of time, is there a website, or more than one website that people go to for information about this?
Oh, we're not that organized, I'll tell you, Craig. We do have a Facebook group for people who want to try and stop this from happening. And anybody who would like to is urged to give me a call or find me by email. I can give my email address out if that's
all
okay.
Right.
It's Kirkendall1, KirkenDall1, and the numeral 1 at gmail.com.
Okay.
I might mention a side issue, but related to that, the website for Diesel Health Project and Clean Air Now, the Regional Clean Air Coalition, is cankc.org. We have not written about that topic there, but I'd invite anybody to visit cankc.org.
Okay, cankc.org.
Mm-hmm. Right. Can as in Clean Air Now.
Right.
Thank you.
So now there was a blog comparing this to the proposal and several years ago for the Wizard of Oz theme park that was to be built at the old ammunition plant site. And this person says, this mad scheme is more of the same moonshine. is that how... Are you finding that most people in Lawrence feel this way, or...
I don't know if most people in Lawrence remember the wonderful world of ooze that was proposed at the Sunflower Army Ordnance Plant. That particular project I know a lot about, and there were some simulators in as much as these were private sector folks who wanted to take public land so they could develop it and make a lot of money off it.
Would this be as environmentally hazardous as that would have been?
I think different kinds of hazards. My perception of that project was that that very likely would have ended up with housing developments on sites that were had significant pollution from the activities at the Sunflower plant, good possibilities of lead or other heavy metals, making kids sick or, doing the sort of damage that you see in many parts of the country where they build homes on contaminated land. This is the difference here is this is very clean land and a very relatively clean reservoir, and this development would threaten the land in the reservoir. Certainly both big environmental issues.
Right. And I believe we have a caller on the line. No? Okay. All right. So we just have a couple minutes left. If this goes through, if the development prevails, what are some of the environmental remediation that the group would try to seek to assure that they're required to do?
We are not planning anything like that. We are talking to our political representatives at the city and county level who are very sharp folks and who I don't think have been overly impressed with this proposal.
And is this subject to city approval as well as state? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Right. We do have a caller on the line now. Caller, if you'll state your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Mac calling from Waldo again. I'd like to know when this proposal was first made, when they want to break ground on it and open it up, and is there anything imminent like a vote in the Congress or the city that we need to take action on right away?
I believe this, I might be wrong, but I believe this has been bouncing around since August of 2014, really got hot in 2016. The developers have been trying to quietly meet with different groups. And in fact, one of the reasons this really came to light is the paper kind of accidentally posted a meeting notice, and about 75 of us showed up, and almost everybody, all but two, were opposed to this being done at all. So I don't know what is going to happen in terms of I'm not sure what's going to happen next.
Okay.
So well, I'd say stay tuned and pay attention and thank you for asking that question, Mac. Very much appreciate it.
Right. Thank you for your call. We are out of time, and Naturally is going to give you the calendar next.
Yes. Thanks, Craig. From the Ashes movie screening will be at June 20th from 6:30 to 8:30. It's an advanced screening, and it's also free, which From the Ashes is a documentary film that captures the legacy of coal in communities across the country. Green Ability describes it as a National Geographic film that depicts the coal industry from Appalachia to the Powder River Basin and addresses its future under the Trump administration. The film goes beyond the rhetoric of the war on coal to present what's at stake for our economy, health, and climate. From the Ashes will be shown at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 20th at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center, which is located at 4750 Troost, right in Kansas City, Missouri. And also, the Maker Faire is this coming weekend. Local creators and makers will display electronic ingenuity, artistic creativity, and repurposing inspiration at the Maker Faire Kansas City. It's a family-friendly festival, and there'll be exhibits and demonstrations, all kinds of stuff going on, KCPT Kid Zones, repurposed creations, and live music. It's the 7th annual event, and it takes place at the Union Station, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, June 24th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, June 25th. And on June 24th at noon is the Waldo Bicycle Festival. Everything you always wanted to know about cycling will be featured at the Waldo Bicycle Festival on Saturday, June 24th. There will be bike races for adults and kids, games, food trucks, music, and bike-inspired artists and crafters, vendors, all kinds of stuff. It'll be like a big bike block party. Also information on bike commuting and riding with the kids. The festival goes from noon to 4, Saturday, June 24th, in the parking lot of Family Bicycles, 7337 Broadway. And you can find more details about all these events if you visit greenabilitymagazine.com. That's all I got, Mike.
All right, we'll go out with This Week in Water.
Climate Change Expedition held up by climate change. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
In connection with the Flint water crisis, the Michigan Attorney General charged 5 people with involuntary manslaughter for the death of an 85-year-old man who succumbed to Legionnaire's disease.
The outbreak of the illness is alleged to have been caused by officials switching to the corrosive Flint River, the same water that caused lead poisoning.
About a dozen people died, and many were infected with Legionella in 2014 and 15 in the county where Flint sits.
Those charged include the director of the state's Health and Human Services Department, who allegedly failed to warn the mostly black population of Flint about the outbreak.
Facing other charges is the state's top doctor, who is accused of threatening to cut funding to researchers studying the link between the Flint River and Legionnaires. She is also accused of lying to investigators.
Robert Skidmore, the 85-year-old who died in 2015, had lived in Flint his whole life and worked at General Motors for 37 years. By the time he contracted the disease, the attorney general said that state officials knew about the outbreak but had not made it public.
Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, testified at a House committee hearing on Thursday where he was barraged with tough questions from Republicans.
The White House has proposed cutting the EPA's budget by more than 30%, and many members of the GOP showed their displeasure.
Representative Rodney Frelinghuysen, a Republican from New Jersey, expressed concern over the substantial cuts to nearly 100 hazardous waste sites, of which his state has more than any other.
Republican David Joyce from Ohio pointed out that if the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is cut as Trump plans, it would have economic consequences.
And a Republican from Idaho, Michael Simpson, told Pruitt that the job cuts at EPA would mean fewer people testing and approving pesticides that potato farmers need.
According to Mother Jones, Trump's budget would eliminate more than 50 EPA programs and cut the agency's research nearly in half.
Representative Mark Amadei, a Republican from Nevada, told Pruitt that the EPA would get more money than Trump asked for because he noted that, frankly, nobody is standing on the rooftops begging for dirty water, dirty air, and dirty soil.
When the Army Corps of Engineers completed its review of the Dakota Access Pipeline, it failed to adequately consider the impacts of an oil spill on the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's fishing and hunting rights.
So ruled a federal judge in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. While the judge ruled that the agency had largely complied with environmental laws, he also said that the Corps did not evaluate environmental justice issues.
Federal agencies are required to consider consider whether a project will have an especially negative impact on poor and minority communities. However, the judge said that he was hard-pressed to conclude that the Trump administration had used reasonable criteria in doing so.
It's not clear what will happen next with the pipeline that is now transporting oil. The judge did not stop its operation, but he asked the tribe and the owner of the Dakota Access Pipeline to submit briefs as to whether it should be stopped.
The judge did order the Corps to reconsider its review, but an attorney for the Sioux told the Associated Press that the government might simply decide the pipeline is safe enough and reissue the permit.
Nevertheless, Standing Rock Sioux Chairman Dave Archambault II called the ruling a major victory. The next hearing in the matter comes on Wednesday, June 21st.
The first part of a climate change study to be conducted in Canada's Hudson Bay had to be canceled last week because of problems caused by climate change.
Researchers from five Canadian universities were scheduled to travel north on an icebreaker, but due to warmer temperatures, hazardous sea ice from the Arctic is traveling further south.
The team has been monitoring and analyzing the effects of climate change on Arctic marine and coastal ecosystems since 2003, according to a statement from the University of Manitoba.
One of the experts involved said that climate changes are increasing the mobility of sea ice now and will do so more often in the future.
The ship the team used was earlier diverted off its course to help ferries and fishing boats deal with heavy ice in areas between Labrador and Newfoundland.
Meanwhile, at the other end of the world, the common housefly is threatening to invade parts of the Antarctic. The Guardian reports that with soaring temperatures, plants and insects normally not present pose a major threat.
The flies come on ships and then base themselves on the continent. One researcher said that the flies carry pathogens that could have a devastating effect on indigenous species. And finally, just outside Vancouver, Canada, there is a new roadside attraction. Or should we say roadside distraction?
Police in Surrey, British Columbia, say they've received numerous calls from motorists claiming they've seen a crocodile in a marsh just off the highway.
Now, saltwater crocodiles, the world's largest living reptile at 20 feet long, can be found in North America, but the furthest north you should find them is in Florida or maybe South Carolina. You won't find a croc wandering through wetlands in Canada.
If you're lucky enough, though, you may find the northwestern alligator lizard, which can grow to a scary 8 inches long.
Okay, then, so what's lurking off Highway 17? Well, according to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, it's a blown-out truck tire. They tweeted that, quote, any croc sighting in Surrey is just a load of garbage, literally.
Or so they say. The Mounties are not willing to wade into the marsh to remove it. Sounds fishy.
We looked at it, and you can too at our website at h2oradio.org. You decide if the so-called tire is a reptile or if the Mounties' claim is a croc of bull. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Sustainable water management means more than just conservation. Learn about water efficiency and resilience at awwa.org/sustainable.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.